This week we're headed to one of the oldest classrooms in the world as students get a lesson in ancient culture on Tasmania's rugged west coast. We'll meet a couple who've been on an epic road trip towing a vintage-style caravan kitted out as a mobile cafe and serving up specialty coffee in remote corners of the country. And a specialist detector dog trainer shares his tips on teaching old dogs new tricks.
All us animals, in humans, dogs, deer, possums, all of us animals do things because there's a reason to do it, and it's normally to do with a reward, and I suppose survival as well. But with canines, it's a reward-based process. They love to please. Some rewards can be as simple as a little tickle under the ear, and some can be as elaborate as beautifully cooked fried chicken or something like that.
Yes, that'll get our dog moving every time, and it turns out a tasty treat can in fact be the best incentive. But first, in rural towns, a sense of community is strongly felt, and there's often a common factor drawing people together – sport. As our reporter Danny Grindley found out, it's one of the reasons a group of professional women, juggling families, farming and work commitments, find the time to be part of their local netball team.
The town of Harrow has a population of 200, and it's not exactly at the centre of the business world. The nearest Woolies or Coles is a good hour drive away, but it's buzzing with professional women.
I'm a research agronomist.
I'm a dental nurse.
I'm a neurophysiology specialist.
An optometrist assistant.
A senior health and safety specialist.
A beauty therapist slash wool handler slash farmer.
My husband and I have an earth-moving business.
A nursing student.
A community exercise provider, or aka personal trainer. And a farmer.
There's no conference or special women's event. They're here, or 30 k's away at Balmoral, every week for C-grade netball.
Rightio, one more!
Let's go! They didn't mention it, but between us, we also have 10 kids. Yes, we. Hello, I'm Danny Grindley. I'm a journalist, and I joined this team with hopes to meet a few people in the town I married into, in a farming region in Western Victoria.
My name's Isabella Close.
For a long time, I knew Izzy as the one who harped on about doing this junior netball drill called Cut the Cake.
Yeah, cut the cake's the best. You can't fold it.
It wasn't until 4 months into the season that I heard about the other side of her life as a neurophysiology specialist.
I work in spinal surgery, and I'm running tests on the patient that's on the table to make sure that messages are going both up and down the spinal cord while the surgeon's operating. It's pretty much to just make sure the spinal cord is unharmed during the procedure.
It's a long way from the netball courts of Harrow and Balmoral.
I live in Geelong. I work in Melbourne, but I'm all over the shop. Like, I was in Sydney last Friday. I'm in Adelaide on Tuesday. I was in Adelaide last Tuesday as well. So I travel back every weekend for netball. Like, it's a lot of driving, but yeah, it's all worth it.
I've been in a paddock at Swan Hill at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon and realised that I had to get going to make 6:30 netball training.
Bridget Doyle is also used to travel. She's the research agronomist.
We spread quite an area, say from Adelaide down to Lake Bolac and Inverleigh. I guess implementing trial programs and research for both government and multinational organisations.
Now based in Horsham, Bridget is at the heart of global grain research. The Wimmera draws in ag leaders from a huge list of countries. But as so many regional medical clinics, councils, childcare centres and schools will tell you, a good job isn't enough to attract and keep professionals.
It's all good and well to move for your occupation and your career, but you've got to have a social aspect to enjoy the town.
That's partly what lured Kate Cameron back from Canada.
When I came home, it was just so nice to have been gone for 5 or 6 years and then everyone still really cared. It's like a big warm hug.
Kate now spends most of her time as a wool handler in shearing sheds. The qualified beauty therapist is about to start her own business.
So I'm setting it up at my house on the farm, in the front room. I've got a foyer and a room. Yeah, I'm nearly organised.
Her farm is 30 k's out of these already isolated towns. But netball has provided a strong list of potential customers.
Absolutely. I've been home for 2 years and I've had people at me the whole time I've been home. So it's just a matter of setting it up and I'll be right to go.
If there was no sporting club to come back to, the ones that are in their 20s, they wouldn't come back.
Lauren Linto has three kids, a personal training business, and a community health position at the local Bush Nurse Centre. Oh, and a farm to help run. And she coaches the junior girls.
Down here, whistle girls!
I love just switching off and playing, and it is, it's a switch off hour for sure.
But it's the bigger picture, the future for her kids, that drives her commitment to the club.
Sport has always brought the community together, and you don't actually have to play to be a part of it. It does bring jobs, it keeps people local. The actual footy netball club is all volunteers, but it really does keep the towns going, yeah.
Hannah Vaughan also travels back from boarding school.
It offers that fitness, obviously, which I do need in year 12, which helps me study a lot better as well. Give me a break.
We know we're losing Hannah next year. She'll head off to uni to study nursing and midwifery. Of course, everyone hopes these young ones will follow their dreams. But a secret part of us hopes that on one of those visits home, maybe they'll get snagged, like Katie Little did.
I found love and then had to work out what I was going to do in this community.
Katie's our coach and a senior health and safety manager for mining company Aluka Resources, which means another traveller.
I think I'm all at home for 1 week every month.
We don't always take Katie very seriously, which is just fine by her.
What I do is very serious. You know, there's been some major accidents that I've had to attend, and you feel as if you have to be professional all times while you're at work. So this just gives me my escape.
The most remarkable thing about my netball team is how unremarkable it is. Sorry, girls. There are three other senior teams in this club alone and thousands around the country stacked with professional women. For some of them, it's not always going to be possible to live and work in rural Australia. But netball will always be that niggle to come home and somehow make it work.
Thank you, girls. Let's walk it up again.
See if you can find it, all right? Show me. Yes! I want his nose on the truffle.
Steve Austin has been training scent detection dogs for more than 30 years. He's worked with dogs to track down everything from noxious weeds to explosives and narcotics.
Truffle? Fine.
But it's his dog whispering skills with the truffle industry that has this crowd of 50 or so growers transfixed.
Throw the ball. Give him a big round of applause, everybody, because this is a very, very good dog.
Hello, I'm Larissa Smith. Today, Steve is in northern Tasmania, where he's sharing his specialist detector dog training skills with truffle growers and teaching them the science behind training dogs to sniff out the aromatic fungus.
First thing you've got to do, I feel, is get find out what reward drive really excites and turns that dog on. I think that's the most important thing, because all us animals, in humans, dogs, deer, possums, all of us animals do things because there's a reason to do it, and it's normally to do with a reward and I suppose survival as well. But with canines, it's a reward-based process. They love to please. Some rewards can be as simple as that little tickle under the ear, and some can be as elaborate as beautifully cooked fried chicken or something like that.
How do you then marry up the reward with the thing that the dog has to find, whether it's a weed or whether it's a truffle?
Sure. Well, first of all, we do what's called a conditioned reinforcer. So we give the dog, we say a word. I just use the word yes. Some people use good. It's got to be a very short word. Some people use a little clicker. And then the word or the sound of the clicker or the whistle, whatever it may be, is associated with something very pleasant, which is the reward that the dog really likes. Now, that's the first step. So whenever the dog hears that yes or that good, it should turn and say, oh, no, there's a ball coming. So once we establish that clearly in the dog's mind, we then put the odour that the dog has to find in a very quiet, undistracted area, lots of it. The dog will go up to it because there's nothing else in the room but that odour in that box. It goes, what's that? Has a bit of a sniff. Then we say yes, and we give the dog the reward. And very soon the dog starts to think this odour instigates the word yes, and the word yes is always followed by something really nice. That odour is very good to find. I'm going to go look for some more. There's a few little steps in between, but basically that's how it works.
And that's the technique truffle growers Michael and Melanie Jones are hoping to refine. The pair are from Stony Oak at Roseviers in the northeast of Tasmania.
It's only very small with some truffle trees on it, and we're just sort of getting into it and got a little puppy that we're trying to see if we can help us find some truffles in the ground, and this would be our second year this year of actually getting some truffles out from the trees that we've got.
Did you sort of have any idea of how you would go about training her from the get-go?
Yeah, we had plenty of ideas, which we'll probably revisit now and start again after today. So it's been really good today to learn from Steve and that about how to do it properly. So back to the drawing board, I think. We'll start again.
How much is she worth to you, do you think, in the long run?
Don't know. No. Depends if she can find some truffles. She might be worth much.
So how do you get your dog on its L plates to dig up a ripe truffle?
There's four quadrants of operant conditioning, four quadrants. There's positive and negative reinforcement, and there's positive and negative punishment. So we use positive reinforcement when it finds the ripe truffle. If it indicates to an unripened truffle or something we don't want, we use what's called negative punishment. We withdraw the reward. We don't give the dog the reward. So in the end, the dog goes, well, it's not much point finding these unripened truffles or whatever else is in the suitcase or whatever else is in the area, because they don't pay. It only pays when I find the ripe truffle. So I'm going to ignore all those other things, the unripened truffle, and find the ripe truffle because they pay. And that's the process of making sure that when you use negative punishment, withdrawing the reward if they make a mistake, and positive reinforcement when they do the right thing, the dog is never afraid to keep trying.
How much is a dog like this worth?
Categorically, hundreds of thousands of dollars if it's a very good dog, because it's what the dog saves in time, first and foremost, right? The time it takes. That you, if you had to go along and open every suitcase from every passenger, from every aeroplane at Melbourne-Sydney airports, it would take you forever. There'd be a queue a mile long and it would hit the fan, literally. But a dog just finds out what's, you know, what it's looking for in that suitcase within a second. Boom, 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 boom. Bag clear, bag clear, bag clear. So when you're finding truffles, for example, you have to go and, if you're not having a dog, you've got to dig it up and look, dig it up and look. Dog goes, no, 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 this one. No, 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 this one. So that's how I evaluate a dog. It's this time it saves in the effort of finding the odour.
Good job. Good girl. It's a good girl.
Dog trainer Steve Austin, who's been working with truffle growers in northern Tasmania, teaching them tricks to train their dogs to sniff out ripe truffles. He was speaking with our reporter Larissa Smith. You're with A Country Breakfast on RN. Still to come, we'll meet the young couple following the sun and gaining their own following with coffee lovers around the country. First, though, let's join an excursion to a significant Indigenous site in a region that's not only rich in cultural history, but also boasts a stunning coastal landscape.
Orange is a good colour to look for spongelite. Spongelite was the extremely sharp type of cutting tool that I was talking about before with you guys.
Today we're learning from the oldest classroom in the world. There's one thing to learn about Aboriginal culture and history, but there's another to bring them out on country and to learn from Aboriginal people and perspectives, so it's been really valuable.
Andrew Starrick is principal of Burnie Primary School in northern Tasmania. Today he's brought grade 4 students to the far northwest corner of the island, where they're exploring places that are incredibly significant for Indigenous Tasmanians.
Like most things, I was just talking to the kids just then about, you know, they were learning about abalone shells, for example, but to actually have one in your hand and to experience it, that's when the learning happens.
They'll visit the Premangana Indigenous Protected Area and the nearby King's Run property. Both are dotted with artefacts left behind by people who lived in this region hundreds and in some cases thousands of years ago.
I've been dragging kids up this way for about 17 years now. It's been a bit of a passion of mine in education to be able to get kids on country.
Hello, I'm Rick Eves. I've come along on this excursion to this rugged and spectacular part of the world. While Andrew has been coming here with students for many years, he says today's trip is incredibly special. The group has been joined by Aboriginal Discovery Ranger Jai Croswell, who is sharing his knowledge with the children.
Cunningong in Palawakani, also known commonly known as Pigface, very, very commonly harvested by Indigenous people. This time of year, you may even see a few just starting to flower.
Because it's each year it becomes easier as you you learn new things yourself and new contacts. But having Jai here today has been a game changer for us.
That there is the outside. You can just see the stripes of our warana, commonly known as periwinkles. Nice big one. You see, we can find another one just here.
An Aboriginal Discovery Ranger working with parks. He was also a kindergarten student of mine when I was at Redpath Primary School back in 2000. So it's been an absolute joy for me to learn from Jai now.
And you're taking the kids to the King's Run property today and to Premagana, the mountain. It must be a great addition to the experience of learning down here to have access to that King's Run property.
Absolutely. We've been fortunate to have developed relationships with a number of different people within Aboriginal communities to allow us to go onto those places, deeply significant places, and it's really hard to describe until you get down there and it actually engulfs you and it's part of you, and it's a very spiritual place. And so to be able to share that with the kids is an amazing learning experience that that a lot of adults will never get the opportunity to do.
Another seal bone, beautiful job. We can see that one. It would have been potentially one of its pectoral bones for its front flippers. It's very old, you can tell. It's very brittle on the inside. This could well be a bone that's been taken from a harvested fur seal in this area with these seal hides here.
Hey, my name's Jai Croswell. So here we are at King's Run, last refuge for a lot of endemic species, plants and wildlife that are still a really huge part of Indigenous culture here in Tasmania. Really is amazing seeing the seal hides, so seeing the indentations within rocks on this coastline, which we use as ambush sites for hunting seals, as well as temmas, hut depressions left behind by the Indigenous people living in the area, as well as extensive middens. So we're seeing all the different types of marine resources harvested by Indigenous people over generations in this area.
My name's Jared Edwards. We're currently standing at Premagana, which is on the northwest coast of Tasmania, about 10 kilometres north of Murrawar. It's an area of land that was returned to the Aboriginal community in the late 90s. And it's one of the most culturally rich and sensitive areas that you could find on Earth. Premagana is one of those places that's got a lot of stories to tell about the old people. It's got the marks that they left behind in the sandstone rocks up on the end of the beach. It's got some of the most rare plant species in the world that you'll find, like the Crispedia premagana is only located here on the southern flanks of the mountain. I suppose I'm very fortunate in that I've had the opportunity as an Aboriginal person to live on and care for Premagana. It's a place that our community holds dear to their hearts, especially Northwest Coast community members and also community members from all around the state and around Australia. Every year we congregate here for one long weekend in March and just spend 4 or 5 days practicing culture, catching up, watching our kids grow up, sharing stories. And I think this year there was about 250 people, and it's an absolutely empowering thing.
The closer we look, the more you see. That's the beauty of it. That looks, yes it is. Oh yep, very slate-like. You can see
what do you want to see or hear from the kids back in Burnie a week or a month from now that you think they will have gained from this experience?
It's an experience that we weren't privy to. Aboriginal culture and history wasn't necessarily given great exposure when I was at school, for example, but it is now. And so adults are now learning at the same time as kids. And so Jai sharing his knowledge with us, the kids then going home, sharing their knowledge and experiences, and respect and recognition and acknowledgement is teaching us a lot.
Look, I think the biggest thing for us as Aboriginal people when we bring children onto country, Aboriginal kids or non-Aboriginal kids, is that sense of time and connection to country that Aboriginal people have with places like this, but also a sense of ownership that everyone should take away from this, because at the end of the day, Lutra Witta or Tasmania belongs to everyone, and if everyone can take away a sense of ownership and pride in that story, it helps us as Aboriginal people preserve it and protect it for many, many generations to come, so that that story can continue to be told.
So the muffin flavours today are blueberry and cream cheese or raspberry and white chocolate? The raspberry and white chocolate?
The muffins are freshly baked and the coffee is strong and hot. But this is not your average cafe. For more than a year, this vintage-style caravan has been travelling around the country, bringing specialty coffee to remote communities. Around a year and a half ago, Melbourne couple Jess Davidson and Andy Hoffman set out on a road trip with a difference. They've been towing this purpose-built cafe on wheels behind their camper van and stopping in outback towns along the way. After covering thousands of kilometres, they've now settled in one place for a while, by the ocean in Port Macquarie in mid-north New South Wales. Hello, I'm Emma Siossian. I've joined Jess and Andy while they serve coffee from their van, which is parked up on a grassy area. When the crowd thins, they whip me up the perfect flat white and tell me how their adventure began.
We just loved camping. You know, we own a 1983 Toyota Hiace camper van, and every weekend, every chance we could, we would try and go out in that and go adventuring. And I suppose we got to the point where we thought, why can't we do this all the time, not just on the weekends? Being from Melbourne, where it's pretty saturated with coffee and great coffee at that, we would find sometimes in getting in our camper van and travelling around, you know, parts of Victoria, we found it hard to sometimes find a really good cup of coffee that we were used to in Melbourne. So we kind of came up with the idea that we would take our, you know, quality coffee around the country and maybe to some places that were, you know, going without or places that didn't have cafes. So we made it our mission to, yeah, travel the country, do what we love, but also bring some great coffee with us. So we were really well received, and we spent 9 months planning. So we really wanted to be in, you know, certain areas at certain times and kind of follow the good weather and follow the sun. And, you know, we were probably most well received in the outback, where there's, you know, not a lot of cafes. All you've got is roadhouse coffee, which is, you know, not the best. That was, you know, probably our favourite part of our travels, was out there in the middle of nowhere. We built quite a following out there and were, yeah, really well received. People coming back for three coffees in a row, you know. The van lifestyle we loved was just, you know, every week having a new area to call home, you know. And I suppose the people that you would meet in that travelling community on the road were quite inspiring people. And yeah, I suppose it was just the getting out of a routine and, yes, just adventuring every day.
There were some challenges while on the road, including managing deliveries, with coffee supplies coming from a roaster in Melbourne. They also encountered some pretty pricey milk.
Well, not being in the one place for very long, it made it a bit difficult when it came to dealing with suppliers and all that, so we'd have to get all of our coffee supplies sent out via the mail or via courier and sort of order like 10 days ahead or something just to be sure that it would get to the town where we're getting it delivered. The whole time, I think we only ever had one late delivery.
Yeah, that was to Mount Isa. So that was like a four-week journey to get from Melbourne to Mount Isa, our coffee. But it was, you know, still good to go when it got there. And yeah, I suppose with milk was always pretty easy to find, although Daily Waters Pub in the middle of the Northern Territory was probably our most expensive milk purchase. I think it was like $5.60 per 2 litre of milk plus freight on top of that. So we had like $6 2 litre milks there.
Despite loving life on the road, it was an easy decision to grind their coffee van to a halt for a while in Port Macquarie.
The weather.
Weather's so good.
Not just the weather. There's the climate here is amazing. So I definitely don't miss Melbourne winters. So we haven't really felt a winter in a while.
2 years we haven't
couple
had a winter.
Years, so yeah. It's been nice. But yeah, the people here are just so friendly and welcoming. The beaches, the mountains,
rainforest, wildlife.
It's got everything here. Everything we need.
The couple's business name, Round and Round Coffee, was inspired by the famous song from Brisbane band The Go-Betweens, and they've enjoyed living by the lyrics.
One of our favourite travelling songs, and the lyrics go round and round.
Up and down, through the streets of your town.
So that's basically what we're doing. We're driving round and round and bringing coffee to the streets of your town. So that seemed to fit pretty well, I think.
Thank you. Yeah, it's quite cute, isn't it? in a couple of years, you know, when we're starting to think about starting a family, when we have a couple of kids, we'd love to go on the road again, but get a bigger coaster bus or something like that with a bit more space, and yeah, definitely travel around and do another lap and get over to the West Coast this time, which I've done before, but Andy hasn't been over there, so that's definitely on the cards.
Thanks so much. Have a good day.
Jess Davidson, and we also heard from her partner Andy Hoffman after travelling the country with their mobile cafe. The couple have ground to a halt for a little while in Port Macquarie, where they spoke with our reporter Emma Siosian. And you can see more on that story, including photos of Jess and Andy in their gorgeous vintage style caravan. Just head to our website.